Chapter 41. Dr. Van Ripple's calling card lists an address in a shabby little district that reminds me of a comfortable chair in need of an upholsterer. The row houses are not particularly well kept. They have no aspirations beyond providing lodging to their inhabitants. "Charming," Felicity says as we make our way down a narrow, poorly lit street. "It got you out of the house, didn't it?" I say. Children run past us. They play in the dark, their mothers too tired to care. "Well, my mother still believes that I'm there, sitting at the piano." "That was an impressive trick, Gemma. Tell me, do your powers detect Dr. Van Ripple's lodging house yet?" "For that we only require our eyes and direction," I reply. We pass a pub that spills out working folk. Some are stooped with age, others can't be older than 11 or 12. Mothers cradle babes to their bosoms. A man stands on a crate just outside the pub. He speaks with vigour and conviction, holding his audience in thrall.
"Should we work for the sweater 14 hours a day for a pittance? We should do like the match girls done at Bryant and May, and our brothers on the docks."
There are mumbles of encouragement and of dissent.
"They'll starve us," a man with hollows under his cheek shouts. "We'll have nothing."
"We already have nothing. It's the only thing I don't want more of,"
a lady calls, and everyone laughs.
"A strike. Support our sisters at the Bearden factory. Take courage from their stand, brothers and sisters. Fair pay, fair hours, a fair London."
A cheer goes up. The crowd applauds. It draws the attention of a constable.
"Here now,"
he says.
"What's this about?"
The man steps off the crate, holding out his hat.
"Evening, Governor. We're collecting for the poor. Spare us a copper."
"I'll spare you a room for the night, in Newgate."
"Can't throw us in jail for assembling,"
the man says.
"The law can do what it bloody well likes,"
the constable says, waving his nightstick. He disperses the crowd, but he cannot disband their convictions. The people talk in excited whispers still.
"Here now," a lady holding a baby chides. "You some of them fancy ladies come slumming?"
"Certainly not," Felicity replies, sounding every bit like the sort who would hire a carriage with friends to gawk at the poor.
"Well, you can clear off. We won't be your entertainment for the evening. Not for the likes of you."
"Have a care." I take V's arm. Not a word. We turn the corner, and there it is. We've invented a tale to gain entry, but the tired landlady knows not to ask questions of her lodger's lady callers, lest she discover her suspicions are ugly truths. She knocks twice on the magician's door and wearily announces us. Dr. Van Ripple's eyes widen in surprise. He wears a worn-out dressing robe over his trousers.
"Come in, come in. Dear me, I wasn't expecting callers this evening."
He closes the door and bids us have a seat. An enormous board in a gilded frame looms in the corner. It shows a painting of a much younger Dr. Van Ripple in a turban. His fingers point toward a dazed woman who would appear to be under his spell. The board reads, "Dr. Theodore Van Ripple, Master Illusionist. Feats of magic that must be seen to be believed." On one wall hangs a portrait of an older woman with dark hair and eyes like Dr. Van Ripple's. Beside the portrait is a hair wreath made to honour the dead, the hair cut and framed as a reminder of the loved one. This one is a coiled braid of faded grey and brown.
"My mother,"
he says, catching me staring.
"Even the best illusionist cannot cheat death."
Dr. Van Ripple offers us a seat on a shabby settee covered in an old paisley shawl. I sit on something hard, a book. The Picture of Dorian Gray by Oscar Wilde.
"Ah, so that is where it went. I'd been wondering,"
Dr. Van Ripple exclaims, seizing it. Felicity makes a face.
"Mr. Wilde was tried for indecency. Papa says he is a thoroughly immoral man."
"It is Queensberry and men like him who are indecent,"
Dr. Van Ripple says, referring to the man who brought the charges against Mr. Wilde.
"Why do you say such, sir?" Felicity presses.
Dr. Van Ripple bends the flower in his buttonhole toward his nose and inhales deeply.
"True affection and love have a purity which shall always prevail over bigotry."
"We have not come here to speak of Mr. Wilde's misfortunes," Felicity says hastily and far too rudely,
but Dr. Van Ripple shows no sign of being affronted by her brashness.
"Indeed. To what do I owe this unexpected visit?"
"We have need of your services," I say.
"Ah, I am sorry to disappoint you, but I am recently retired as an illusionist. I've nothing to offer but old tricks from an old man. That is not what the people want these days. They want vulgar thrills, he grouses. Like this Houdini chap, escaping from chains and boxes. It is cheap music hall entertainment. In my day, I played the best theatres, from Vienna to St. Petersburg, from Paris to New York. But now the days of magic are ending, I fear. The new power in the world is industry. Industry and greed.
He takes a deep breath and lets it out in a sigh.
But you did not come to listen to tales of the glory days of an old magician, my dears. And so I would bid you a good night.